Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
This message comes from our sponsor, Teladoc Health. There are lots of reasons for wanting to be healthy: family, work, living a fuller life. Teladoc Health understands. Whether you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or just need to manage your weight, Teladoc Health can help. Visit teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy for more information. That's TELADOC health/whatsyourwhy.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Alex, and welcome back to On Air. Delighted to have you here along for the ride. It's Wednesday. It means it's time for a new episode. How are you, Dan?
I am great. Alex and I, guys, have just had like 10 minutes of laughing nonstop, so we're in a good mood. We're ready for a good Q&A episode.
We have tons of questions to get through. Thank you for sending a wide-ranging variety, because it means that we are able to cover a lot of different things, maybe areas that we wouldn't normally be covering, in what is going to be an episode, as promised, dedicated mostly to Q&A. Obviously, it's been a very busy week, as usual, in aviation. Some big headlines, specifically over in the States. Many of you were already sending in questions about those, so it forms part of the wider Q&A. Okay, so without further ado, let's get going. To kick things off, Andy is asking, what do we make of the Boeing CEO resignations? Is it enough to fix all of the troubles at the US manufacturer? I mean, what did you think when you got this alert yesterday afternoon? Or rather, sorry, the day before.
Yeah, first of all, I just have to say that I love how we're like, Q&A episode, but it's going to, this beginning will just be like a normal episode because we're going through the headlines. But I don't think anyone was surprised to see this, given that Boeing is going more and more into crisis mode. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that it was quite unusual, dare I even say unprecedented, that the current leadership of Boeing were able to get so far without any changes, considering how long these crises have been unfolding. I mean, we're not just talking about everything now since the Alaska blowout in January, but, you know, this goes all the way back to the early days of the 737 MAX program, also the 787 Dreamliners, and so on and so on. So there's so many different challenges that they've had to face as a company, many of them actually involving tragedies as well, with actual human lives lost following those two 737 MAX crashes in Indonesia and Ethiopia. And then, of course, now everything that has happened with the fact that the 737 MAX is the safest plane in the world. It's been under the microscope. It is categorically... Oh, also, there are still problems. Fast forward to 2024, and of course, the 737 MAX is almost never out of the news, with real safety concerns and also a big quality, as we've spoken about, big quality concerns with Boeing production, which has just been slammed left, right, and center. They're not even denying it anymore. They have said that they have these big issues. And now the CEO is gone. The president and CEO of Boeing Commercial Airplanes, that's Stan Deal, he is out, effective immediately. He's been replaced by the chief operating officer, Stephanie Pope, and Dave Calhoun, the Boeing Group CEO, will be gone by the end of the year.
Yeah. Isn't it interesting how he was hired to fix the problems at Boeing when Dennis Muilenburg, the previous CEO, had, you know, it was kind of under him that the company dramatically their public image dramatically deteriorated. Dave Calhoun was hired to fix everything. And clearly that was not the case, especially since, for example, the Alaska Airlines plane where the plug door blew out had been delivered just a few months prior. So this was nothing under the prior CEO. I think a more interesting discussion people are having, which, you know, I'm no legal expert. I don't know what's right here. But some people are asking, why hasn't anyone gone to jail for this, for what happened with the two 737 MAX incidents?
Right. And there is, I mean, we just had recent notification, putting aside the two 737 MAX crashes for one moment, we had a notification that Boeing could face, or somebody at Boeing could face, criminal charges because of the Alaska blowout in 2024's January. So, yeah, I mean, look, the two incidents that happened in Ethiopia and Indonesia, they have not gone away for Boeing. And these will continue. This will continue to be a cloud over the company as it tries to navigate its way out of this current storm. I do also wonder if the only reason this is being taken, or appears to finally be being taken seriously now, and they're not even denying that, they're admitting that they're focused too much on the numbers, they've admitted they're focused too much on just pumping out jets and not focusing on safety and quality. Has this all only happened now because what happened in January with the 737 MAX door blowout was a US carrier? I just don't know if they would have, if this reaction will have been the same had it have happened, for example, on the continent of Africa or somewhere in South America or in the Far East.
I agree. I mean, just look what everyone was saying about Lion Air after the first crash. There was no question, oh, is this Boeing's fault? Of course not. It's the airline. Everyone's saying, oh, they're, you know, Indonesian aviation is not safe. And they were so quick to try to put blame there when that wasn't the problem at all. So, yeah, to me, that's crazy. I also feel like somehow the current political climate in the US, things are so divided, and people, you know, both parties want to show we're here for America, we're here for the people. I feel like the fact it's an election year and in this political climate as well is making, you know, both the Republicans and the Democrats really want to seem like they're both taking this seriously, and they don't want to, you know, it's not like something years prior where maybe, you know, they both parties would put American interests first. Now it's really like, we're the ones who do things. Look at us.
Yeah, they all want to show that we're the scrutinizing party that is going to hold big America, big corp, you know, Boeing to account. And Americans, you will be safe with us in the White House because we're going to be the ones to tell Boeing. And look, I take you back to those congressional reports, all of the investigations in 2019, 2020, 2021, really damning. They were saying that Boeing had this culture of concealment. Ultimately, they would hide things. That's why safety had fallen to such a dramatic lows in terms of quality and production and so on. And then, of course, all the promises that we are now the safest in the world because no aircraft has been scrutinized harder than ours, and so on and so on. And yet here we are in the same situation years later. So, yeah, this is a story that's not going anywhere. And of course, there are going to be future developments, and we're going to be discussing them, I'm sure, for a long time to come. With that, let's go on to the next question. It's from Khalifa. He says, hey, guys, I really enjoy listening to the podcast every week. My question is concerning my home carrier, Oman Air, which you have both discussed previously. Do they really deserve to be joining Oneworld when the airline is actively shrinking to an almost disappearance state? I hope that made sense, and look forward to hearing your answer. I understand what you mean, Khalifa. Yeah, it does look like it's shrinking into disappearance. What do you think? Should they be joining Oneworld?
I don't think it's a question of whether they deserve it. It's a question of whether they can pay and are invited. But I don't think they really contribute to Oneworld in their future form. So I don't see the value in them doing it. But I mean, if they see value, then sure, go ahead. It's at this point, unfortunately, I feel like, you know, I'm fine either way, because the airline they will be 6 months from now, unfortunately, is not the airline they have been.
Right, and it's already happening. And just to put things into context for anyone who missed that part about Oman Air is set to be joining Oneworld. They were invited a while back when the airline was still in a good shape in terms of a good shape for passengers. Financially, they haven't done well for years and years. But they have a solid product. You can have great service on board. They have great, beautiful cabins across the Boeing 787 fleet and 330s. Now, the long haul fleet is essentially no more. So now, the consultancy company that is ultimately running Oman Air in partnership or at the direct orders of the government has taken a sledgehammer to absolutely everything. If you are now flying from Muscat to Munich, well, not on a 787 or a 330 anymore. You're now doing that journey on a 737 MAX. So good luck to your backs and your spines. And the same in the other direction, Kuala Lumpur as well. I mean, this is an airline that is shrinking beyond belief. And I had the sad news via Instagram that once again, Oman Air have initiated a fresh wave of redundancies to cabin crew that have been at the airline for well over 5, 6, 7, 8 years. And they were really disappointed. It was unexpected. So they are also one of the rare carriers that in this climate where everybody's trying to recruit, they're actually making some crew who have been there for quite a long time building careers redundant, which is really, really a sad development to come out of what Oman Air is, the trajectory Oman Air is on right now, which is just to continue to, as you mentioned, Khalifa, who asked the question, shrink into something very, very small.
Yeah, they are keeping their 787s, we should say, but it's not the same scale or anything as it was before.
Yeah, and that route network has taken a slash as well, hasn't it? In most of the routes that were operated by the 330. I wonder who will pick up the 330s. I think there's a chance QR could.
Interesting. Because they already leased a few. Yeah. So that could be temporarily, I guess. I don't know who else. Maybe, some airline in the general region here, I'm sure.
Joel asks, he says, I believe the A380 is still the best passenger experience money can buy from a consumer perspective. What is your best A380 flight experience to date? P.S. Dan, I am in Toulouse this week and can confirm it is indeed located in the south of France. Sorry, not sorry, says Joel.
Thanks for adding that, Alex. That sounds very you, sorry, not sorry.
Excuse me, don't. That is a worldwide phrase. I'm going to send you a screenshot now. I don't like it when you question the integrity of our listeners who take the time to write in to roast you. Those are my favorite kind of listeners.
Yeah.
Right. What's your favorite? What is your best A380 experience to
I think we both
date?
Have the same, I assume.
I'm going to say
Singapore Suites. I got to fly with Oscar, have a double suite. It doesn't get better. The crew just. I don't know how Singapore Airlines, especially first class crew, any age, you know, any origin, they manage to make you feel like you're their best friend. And it's the most fun flight you can have, whether it's, you know, I was in it for like 8 hours, but I would have gladly like lived in that suite.
Yeah, it's bigger than some apartments in London and New York, that's for sure. My best ever A380 experience was also Singapore A380 suites, but it was the delivery flight, so it was a private flight from Toulouse. See, it wasn't commercial like Dan's money can buy experience. Mine was a money can't buy experience.
Yeah, you know, speak for the people.
Listen, it was work, okay, but it was from Toulouse to Singapore. It was the delivery of the aircraft. And nobody had flown in those suites before, not even Line Cutter Dan, okay? And I was in the suite over Iran at 40,000 feet during a once-a-year meteor shower surrounded by shooting stars everywhere. They dimmed the cabin lights so that it was completely dark and I could just see a sky with millions. It looked like an Apple MacBook screensaver. Millions of stars, and they were falling and zipping and shooting, and it was amazing. That was probably one of my most memorable flights ever. And the fact it was a delivery of the hottest aircraft in town with the hottest cabin in town that nobody had flown. Just make that bit very clear to you, Dan.
But who has flown it since then?
I don't know. I don't care. I never think about those that came after. I always just think about first, you know. Everyone that came after is merely an afterthought. Anyway, so let's move on. So Lachlan in Brisbane asks, I've recently qualified for One World Emerald in brackets via Qantas and wanted to know the perks I may expect when flying from Heathrow Terminal 5 on a BA short-haul flight next week. Thank you and good day from Down Under.
Okay, I'm sure Alex will help arrange a wonderful bus gate for you, A10, so you can enjoy the true Heathrow premium experience.
No, I'm feeling generous. I just do that for you. No, Lachlan, Alpha 1 for you. You can have Alpha 1, one of the best, longest jet bridges in the world. Can you expect? Well, if you are One World Emerald, you should head to the BA First Wing that is located to the right side of Terminal 5 landside. You can check in at the first wing there. They're always super helpful and nice. And then you can go through the dedicated first wing security, which has just recently opened. And I can reveal to you exclusively that you no longer need to remove your liquids or your laptops the first wing security. If you are going to the ordinary security, even fast track security at North and South at Terminal 5, you still have to. They don't have those machines yet. But T5 First Wing, which is for One World Emerald, which you are, as you said, or British Airways Executive Club equivalent, which is gold, then you are able to, plus a plus one, use that dedicated First Wing check-in straight through security, and uniquely it takes you directly into Galleries First, the first lounge. When you are in that lounge, look out for either Sandra or Pauline. They're great and they're always on hand to help you out with whatever you may need. They're really, really great employees of British Airways.
By the way, besides not having to take liquids out, they have removed the 100 ml liquid restriction in the first wing. So you can now bring larger liquids, like real full-size toiletries, if you want, just in those scanners.
Which is amazing for things like, I don't know, deodorant and hairspray and like a bottle of water or whatever. It's now possible. But you have to keep in mind the reason why this is not being publicized so heavy is because the rest of security, or the bulk of security at Terminal 5, you've still got 100 mil limit. You still have to take them out. You still have to take the laptop out. You can't take your full-size can of whatever. So that's why they're keeping it quiet. But hey, this is between us on the podcast, so it's all fine. They're not going
to
know.
Yeah, enjoy that perk. Just try to use it. Like, I'm so curious.
Yeah.
The feeling of bringing through some enormous bottle of whatever must be so unique and special. So enjoy it.
What are those awful, awful cups everyone's obsessing about?
Oh, Stanley cups.
You should take one of those.
Yeah, just buy one and take it through just because.
Yeah, just because. Exactly. Mind you, the cost of a Stanley Cup is probably the same price as one of those little travel miniatures, like, you know, half a £100 or something.
Yep, that's true.
Half a £100. That was a weird way to say £50. There we go. Okay, so Michael says, Mikael or Michael, he says, Dan and Alex, I am curious, as pros in the field, what do you consider to be the unspoken rules that you wish all passengers knew in order to make flying more civilized?
I feel like, okay, we could be here all day with this. We could just be here with this all question. Day.
Right. You say one, I say one, you say one, I say one. Okay.
Sounds good.
Right,
sounds good. First thing that comes to mind is sit down until your boarding group is called.
That's good. My one would be sit down when you're on the aircraft and stay sat.
That's another good one. Number three, don't take off your socks on a plane.
Don't take off your shoes unless you're in a suite and you're going to close the door and then I can't see.
Or smell.
Yeah.
If you're bringing kids, wonderful idea to like bring a little something for other people, even if it's just like buy a bag of 30 earplugs and hand them out to the people around. Such a nice little thing to do. And it makes everyone feel better because it shows that, like, you know, I thought about you as well. And I'm sorry if my kid is crying or whatever, but I have no control.
I don't know if I agree with that one. What,
really?
You want them to hand out earplugs as an excuse. I don't want them to remedy the situation. I want them to stop the root cause. Okay.
So just kill their kid or something.
Just teach the kid to be quiet. Not his little Tommy's going to scream. So here are some earplugs. I'm such a good father. No.
there's a balance there, but sometimes, like, if you're flying with a 1-year old, you can't, you know, reason with them and tell them you need to do this. If they're upset, they're upset. And I think it's so cute when I see, like, parents, you know, more than the earplugs, like many, like we've spoken about in previous episodes, right? A little note with a picture of their child. But there's also like a couple I saw do it maybe like a few months ago, and they were partnered with this like high-end kind of earplug brand. So they made like little candy bags with the earplugs and a handwritten note to all the people around. And I was like, yeah, that's cute. Even if the child doesn't cry, which hopefully not, it doesn't. Just like in case, because it's I would feel horrified on a red eye, for example, if my kid was crying or whatever, and there's no way to control it when they're a certain age.
That is a lot of pressure. I'm always understanding if the kid is, you know, really like a baby, basically. I just don't like naughtiness. But
yeah.
Okay, no, my one would be, keeping with that theme, mine would be bring earphones. Nothing, no matter what age, nothing is acceptable to be played out loud.
True.
I've given someone earphones before and said, please put it in because I'm not hearing it.
Okay, here's a question. What's worse, no earphones or no deodorant? When someone smells so bad and they're like seated right behind you, mainly in economy now, that's like horror scenario.
Obviously that is worse. Worse, because you can block out the noise, but you can't block out a smell unless
put on a mask or something.
Probably already had it on.
what other unspoken rules?
I would say don't go to the bathroom 100 times unless you absolutely have to, but most of the time I think you don't.
I would say just be as nice and respectful to staff as possible, knowing that many of them none of them have control over if there's a delay or you've been denied boarding or whatever it is. It's not just in their hands. So 9 times out of 10, being really nice is, you know, much more beneficial for everyone.
I would say it should be a universal rule. When you are disembarking the aircraft, the row in front of you leaves first. You don't try and push past. Okay, when everybody's patiently waiting, it's one row at a time. Yes, you need to leave. Guess what? So does everybody else. No one has plans to stay on that aircraft once it has landed and arrived at the gate. So, you know, it's not more of an urgency to leave than others. So, and I get those that have got connections as well, and they typically inform the crew, and that's the way to do it, not to just push, because what about the quiet girl that's got a flight connection that she just is an introvert, so she hasn't made it known to 235 people? So I would say one row at a time. What else?
Yep. I think that's enough for now.
Well, that's definitely not it. We could. Also, something that Demi always makes me notice is, for example, if we're on a wide body aircraft and I'm on one side of the aircraft and she's on the other, she goes to get her luggage down, her hand luggage from the overhead locker, and I'm consistently amazed how many men are standing around a petite young lady who is trying to get her case out of the locker that she can barely reach, and they're just staring at her. And I dropped my pen in shock. I find that staggering. And instead, like, I would go through the galley, go through the galley, come out the other side into the other aisle, get her case down for her, and then go back. And she will say to me, why would those men just stare at her and not help? Yeah. I don't know. Have manners like non-existent anymore? I don't understand. Heathrow, a few months ago, when I landed, there was an older lady, she must have been above 75, who was at the baggage belt. Again, all these men, road warrior, business travelers standing around her, and they can see what case she's trying to get off of the bell. Do you think anybody helped her?
No.
Nobody. I was like maybe 15 people away and I'm watching thinking, no one's helping her, no one's helping her, no one's helping her. So went through and took the case off and she said to me, thank you, dear. Thank you so much. That's fine.
Aww.
And I was just looking at these guys. I'm like, you were next to her and also you're like, you know, you're capable and I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah. No, I totally, like in any way where you can help people, be notice what's going on around you. Also, you like see, I see so many single moms traveling with kids or single parents. They're like trying to deal with the stroller, making sure their two and 4 year old kids come along and then they have their bags and they're trying to work everything out, obviously looking so disheveled. And everyone is just looking at them instead of being like, hey, you want me to help with your stroller or you want me to help with this? 100%. I think you should do that. Also, I assume you haven't seen the musical Chicago.
No.
So there's a song I want you to listen to and the listeners called Class from this. And okay. Basically the whole song is about nobody's got no class anymore. And like people, whatever happened to being nice to other people, like, and being helpful. That's the point of the song. It's very relatable.
Ain't that the truth? Okay, I have a question here. It's amazing how many listeners we have in Australia. I love that. So I'm just reading now. I've just lost it. Hold on. God, here we go. Okay, so this is from Tom from Brisbane, Australia. He says, so there's a bit of an anecdote in the beginning, then there's a question. He says, hi, Alex. I'm loving the podcast with Dan. Loving the podcast with Dan. You notice the language there?
It's yeah, he the means podcast. He loves the podcast because I'm in it, you know?
No, he loves the podcast that I do with Dan, like featuring you.
That's not how I interpret it.
That's how I interpret it. Anyway, he says, you may be interested to know that I flew from Perth to Brisbane on Qantas yesterday. After leaving the gate, we returned shortly after due to issues with the anti-ice system. After some time back at the gate, we moved to a new plane. Back at the terminal, I ran into a Qantas pilot friend of mine by chance and he'd heard about the issues with my plane and laughed that out of all people flying, it had to be my plane. Anyway, the real reason I thought to reach out to you is because when I was on the aircraft, I was reminded of your thoughts on Qantas's new safety, in inverted commas, new safety video. Once the fateful music started to play, the lovely cabin crew started rolling their eyes and making hurry up hand gestures to the business class cabin once the safety component finished, much to my joy. P.S. As a platinum Qantas frequent flyer member, I can confirm I was not contacted to appear in that abomination of a video. All the best, Tom from Brisbane, Australia. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Tom. Yeah, that's great or not so great to hear. I don't know.
Yeah. So Moritz says, hi, Alex, question for your podcast. First of all, I love your podcast. I always listen to it when driving to the airport or when cleaning my apartment. Here's my question. Which do you think is the best looking commercial aircraft and why? And he says, mine is the 787-9 because it's kind of aggressive, kind of sharky nose.
Oh.
Thank you so much. Okay.
Okay, Alex, I don't know yours. You tell me.
Mine's the A350-1000.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think it's mean.
You know, Oscar, the other day we were, I guess we were at Heathrow, yeah, the time when I got A10 for the second time. A BA A350 taxis by. And Oscar's quite good at spotting the A350. He's like, what is that? I'm like, it's an A350. He's like, no, you're kidding. What is it? And I'm like, no, it's an A350. He's like, it looks so old. And I'm like,
no.
What? Yeah. I was like, yeah. Maybe it's the BA livery that does it. I don't know. Because it's so retro.
It's always so funny when like the family members, you know, what they perceive. We've landed before at Heathrow. And you know how the arrivals sometimes go over the M25 motorway? Right there. And we're in the car. My mum will say, you know, a really loud, low American Airlines 777-300ER will be at like 500 feet above us. And she'll say, wow, what is that? That's gigantic. I'm like, are you kidding me? We were just on that for 8 hours.
Yeah.
We've just come. She's like, but that looks massive. I'm like, we were just on that, a different airline, thank God, but we were just on that. And yes, it's funny how livery determines perception on size and age and whatever.
Totally. I mean, there are so many situations like that with people who don't know aviation. Like also, if you see an E380 fly by and you're like, oh my God, look at that. And people are like, wow, that looks kind of big. And I'm like, yeah, it's the biggest plane the biggest. In the world. Yeah.
Sometimes from certain angles, my mom's like, that's the short one, isn't it? I'm like, no.
With the E380.
Yeah, she thinks it looks like short from certain angles.
Yeah, I mean, it does look short and stubby compared to others.
I get it if you're comparing it to a 777-300 or a 350-1000 or a 340 or whatever.
Yeah.
But it is funny how it just depends on the angle.
Yeah, that brings us nicely to my favorite, A340-600. It's just, it's my background on my laptop. There's something about how long and like, consistent it is. It's just so satisfying. The four big juicy engines. I love it so much. I like
getting creepy.
The girth. Not kidding. So the
wow. Don't let Spotify slap us with an explicit tag on this episode.
No, but when I was 8, I flew the A340-600 on Virgin Atlantic with my dad for the first time, going from London to New York. And it was the first time I was really like, whoa, what is this? Like, we boarded. I was like, this plane never ends because it's so long as an 8-year-old. And then I was like, whoa, it has TVs back then in, you know, the 2004, I guess. And then the whole flight, I was playing games and I watched SpongeBob the movie. And my dad bought me an A340-600 model on the flight.
I loved that as a kid when you could buy it on the flight.
I know. So then I had it like at home as my holy grail. I was like, oh, look at this masterpiece inside and out, was what I thought. And yeah, I still love it.
Abdullah asks quite a long question. So he tells me that he loved the recent episode about the big news from Qatar Airways. And he says that, as you may know, I use them quite frequently, mainly London Heathrow to Doha. He's put in brackets, typical Qatari student. And he says that about the first class, he wants to know if we're going to see an upgrade on the existing A380 cabins. And he says he loves the A380, but he avoids it because when flying business class, because he's hooked on Q-Suite. Well, I can tell you as a fact that the A380s will not be receiving a cabin upgrade because they are only here to stay until sufficient number of new aircraft, notably the Boeing 777X and others, have joined the fleet, at which time the 380s will start to be phased out. It's not anytime soon, but it's not anything that QR is going to be investing in terms of cabin upgrades for the A380. So what you have now is what you have on that aircraft. He also wants to know if there's any chance of premium economy. I did speak with the CEO about this, and Badr Almir said he is studying. He's studying.
It's happening. That means it's happening.
Studying. It doesn't mean it's happening. It means he's studying the potential of premium economy. So I'm interested to catch up with him. Hopefully, maybe here on the podcast, and we can find out how that study went ahead. What the verdict was. We can get him to exclusively reveal it to us. Maybe we can.
Yes, amazing.
We can do that. You know, yes, that's a good idea. I'm gonna.
But if you're listening, Qatar Airways premium economy is an excellent idea. So. We're all for it.
I can see both sides of it, maybe we should do an on-air study as well, and then we submit it with his study and let the best study win.
Yeah, so. does he know that Lufthansa at least says premium economy generates 6% more revenue per square foot than business class, and that's Lufthansa's business class, which is 222, incredibly dense, and 33% more than economy. So it's a very profitable cabin. And let's be honest, Qatar Airways, even their best economy class, which is very comfortable, is not on the level of a comfortable premium economy seat. There needs to be something to fill that gap. Emirates is expanding with premium economy, so it's time.
Yeah, maybe. And premium economy, as you said, is the industry moneymaker. I mean, if there's one cabin on every single flight that makes, that doesn't mean is there one cabin that's always, you know, full, because business and economy can be full. It doesn't mean they made money, but premium economy, boy, does it make money. Because if you just think of it in the most basic way, I mean, what are you investing in? A slightly better seat, but what are you able to make in terms of markup, in terms of profit margins, in terms of those that have the ability to spend on premium, but it doesn't reach as far as business? Wow, premium economy is a moneymaker. So yeah. Well, hopefully that will come up in the study.
I just have to say, I've been consulting a couple people who have taken my Points Master program, one-on-one consultations, and basically they want to fly like peak summer direct from the U.S. to Greece, for example. So in that case, I'm trying to find them as best I can. Like, look, although business class award space is not that hard to come by, if you're looking to fly direct on American Airlines or whatever it is, yeah, on one specific date, one specific route, the odds of finding a word space are not great. So I've been looking around a premium economy trying to, because they said that was an okay middle ground. So, you know, I'm trying to peek around and I'm blown away because I'm used to seeing, you know, from Europe to the US, at least not at the very peak of summer. It's like $800-$900 round trip in premium economy. Yeah. But from the US to Europe, it's like $3,000, $2,000-$3,000 in premium economy. I'm like, wow. So that's why airlines are, you know, racking in the money on transatlantic in the summers.
Absolutely, absolutely. And what a way to do it with premium. It's just, it makes so much financial sense for the airline. I mean, you know. He also asks, he says, a short funny story as well for you. It was a long time ago, about 2013, so well over 10 years ago now. He says, I was flying back from Najaf in Iraq to Doha, and he was on an A320. He said that when he boarded, he said, quote, there was already a woman on my seat with the same seat assigned to her. It was a Home Alone situation. Turns out she boarded the wrong flight, and I'm still wondering today, 11 years later, how she passed through multiple checkpoints and got on the bus and then the plane and sat down and nobody had caught on. He says also, nobody would have caught on if that seat was not assigned to him. Maybe nothing will have happened. He's, but how often do you think this situation occurs? We do hear about it a few times a year, and I think especially, with my greatest respect to secondary city airports in countries that are not the most developed aviation sectors, such as where you were flying from, Najaf in Iraq, I think there is sometimes, you know, potential for an officer that maybe was distracted at that time, and or a malfunctioning machine that is merely checking the date rather than checking the flight number and lets you in. And then, you know, I don't know, there can be a whole different cocktail of contributors as to what happens. But look, 11 years later, it still does happen from time to time, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, even, for example, several years ago when Oscar and I lived in India for a semester and Oscar's mom came to visit us, she flew into Delhi and then she was going to fly to Jaipur to see us. So she booked a domestic flight. But when she was boarding, it was a bus gate in Delhi. And when she was boarding, they just sort of let them out from one gate, and people coming from the neighboring sort of gate inside the terminal to another bus were let out in the exact same place outdoors to try to walk. Actually, maybe it wasn't a bus gate. Maybe they were walking to the plane. But
oh, and it's like you can choose your aircraft.
Exactly. You know? And as non-abbeats, you don't even know like what's the livery like of my airline. Yeah. What aircraft type am I on? So she's being mixed with these people going to other destinations.
And she actually,
I'm not sure if she walked onto the wrong plane, and thankfully they checked her boarding pass and said, no, you're the one next door. But there was some like crazy confusion there. So even in a place like Delhi, I mean, it's all about the airport design and the signage. Yeah. And
you just reminded me of the exact same thing happened at Luton when I was a kid years ago. We boarded a Monarch flight. And again, it was the gates at Luton, which I think, I don't know if they even still exist today, but basically they were the first ever gates at London Luton Airport. London, please, that we're in London. Anyway, but at Luton Airport, at like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, those gates. And you would walk outside along a sheltered walkway with an opening for this plane and an opening for the next plane and an opening for the next plane. So if you didn't have staff really on top of the game there, as you just described, you could pick and choose what aircraft you get on. And I remember we boarded, again, we were going back home to Malaga. And when we were on the aircraft, 4 or 5 passengers boarded and the crew were saying, no, this is not Alicante, this is Malaga. And he was saying, what? And then they did an announcement. They were like, ladies and gentlemen, just to confirm, this is a flight to Malaga, not to Alicante. Maybe half the aircraft stood up. And I was like, whoa. And that stemmed from what you just said.
Yeah.
That kind of pick and choose ramp.
Yeah, and then imagine people who don't speak English and they're in that situation. Yeah. And they, yeah, you know, have no idea what's going on. That's how people end up in the wrong city.
What a mess. This is a question from Chris. He says, just bring it up. He says, he's wondering if we, just like the way in which Chinese cars on the road 10, 15 years ago were outside of Asia was almost unimaginable, but now in past years, especially in Europe and other parts of the world, they're becoming much more common with brands like Lincoln Co., MG, BYD, Exceed, all being frequently bought up and spotted on European roads. Even here in the Middle East, there's tons of Chinese cars on the road. And yet that wouldn't have been a thing years ago. Chris is asking, do we think we will see a future where we'll see alternative airline manufacturer brands like Comac with their C919, or Russia with their MC-21 operating at, for example, European airlines or US carriers? I mean, what do you think? My quick answer to that is Europe and US, no.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah.
It could be
Africa,
parts,
yes,
of Europe. Yeah. Like, I could see it happening, yeah, in, you know, Eastern Europe, maybe Turkey.
Maybe, yeah.
Not Russian aircraft, probably, given the current state of affairs, but Chinese, I think it's going to slowly, you know, start make its way. People,
I could see Turkish low cost carriers buying up Comac.
Exactly, and you know, certain places in Eastern Europe, possibly, and then you know, once it becomes more normalized, perhaps we'll see some like odd. For example, in Mexico, you had a low cost airline there buying Sukhoi superjets from Russia.
Yeah.
They ended up, there was some problem with them, I think, and they ended up
Problems. They were a nightmare. I reported extensively on that. Those aircraft were a risk to passenger society in Mexico when they used to fly for, who did they used to fly for?
Interjet,
yeah. Yes. And what a mess. I think I did two or three deep dives on the issues at hand with those pesky maintenance problem ridden aircraft that they eventually got rid of.
Yeah.
But that's not to say that, you know, in the future we won't see more.
Yeah, I mean, and that's not to say that, you know, Western-built aircraft are perfect nowadays either, as we've seen.
Not even anywhere near, yeah. So this is a question from... Oh, it's one of those... Do you remember we asked for, like, the morality question? So am I wrong? Okay, so someone's done this quite well. So... Okay, I hope I pronounced his name correctly. Hyun says, given you asked for morale scenarios, here's one I'd like both your takes on. I recently flew Malaysia Airlines in business class and an Australian woman boarded with her young kid and asked the crew to ask me to swap from my window seat into the middle area of seats since her kid would need the window to occupy himself during the flight or he'd get agitated and restless. I politely declined when the purser gently came to check if it was a possibility. Was I wrong? Should I have allowed them to sit in my seat to make the journey easier for a mother and her toddler? I'm still debating this in my head 1 week later.
No.
Well,
I don't think it's your job to switch seats. That's such a bizarre situation. Like, I've never met a kid who could be entertained by looking out the window, considering how slowly it looks like you're moving for like 8 hours. That sounds crazy.
I don't think there's anything wrong with what you did. That was the seat that you had pre-allocated, and it's unfortunate that she wasn't able to secure a window seat, but that has nothing to do with you and it's not your problem. And you could have if you wanted to, but you exercise your right not to, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Yes, amen.
I don't like the passive-aggressive threat of how her kid will get agitated and restless. I'm like, well, I consider that to be a direct threat to everyone else of your inability to parent. So, but we already went down that rabbit hole, didn't we?
Yeah, yeah.
Fabio asks, aside from aviation, what are your hobbies or interests that you enjoy? Perhaps sports, or cinema, and he's put in brackets, obv, not Harry Potter for Alex.
I like this. Okay, we're moving away from aviation. Alex, what are your hobbies?
Travel. No,
it's being at airports.
No, okay. Beach, reading, watching and following tennis, attending tennis matches, following all of the opens around the world.
Dreaming about tennis, reading about loving tennis.
What else? I just saw. Oh, PSG, Paris Saint-Germain Football Club. Any sporting event that they host here in Doha, because they just do it amazingly. And even if you, I've taken friends that have absolutely no interest in football, and they go to, look, for example, like the Asia Cup this year or the World Cup when it was in 2022, and they were just mind blown by it. And oh, love F1. What else? Okay, what about you? I've given five. Go on.
Very sporty. That's interesting. I love anything food. I'm such a foodie. So, you know, I like cooking. I like going out to eat. Like, that's my biggest joy. Whenever, like, I'm traveling with someone else.
God, same.
Yeah, whenever we travel with someone else, they're like, why? You're planning the whole day around where we're going to eat. I'm like, yeah, that's the point. Duh. That's why we travel, to eat at amazing places. So,
yeah,
for me, that's a big one. I don't know. Aviation, I think for both of us, aviation is like so preoccupies our lives so much that it's hard to give room for anything.
Speaking of preoccupy, my mum asked me to ask you. She wants to know. She said to me, ask Dan, 5 hours checking seat maps of flights he's not even flying on. I said, I know. She said to me, 5 hours.
I don't think I said five hours specifically.
I think you did. I think you said like the whole day can go by. I think that's what you.
So yeah. There's this thing that some people do called hyperbole. It means you slightly exaggerate, but, you know, for example, maybe if I'm watching a movie and the movie gets bad, I might spend the second half of the movie checking random seat maps as research, that kind of thing. So, yeah. And then I will say another, like, a dream I have, or my biggest dream, the reason I'm like working very hard now, is to one day live somewhere. I don't want to live too far outside of a city, but I want to live somewhere where I can have a massive amount of land and start an animal sanctuary where I save farmed animals. And
I didn't know this.
Yeah, it's literally my biggest dream to like just have all these animals that have been saved from slaughter or whatever, and give them amazing lives and educate people about it, and wake up every morning and spend time with the animals.
That is very, very noble. We don't deserve animals. They're amazing. What? Have you ever had a dog?
Never had a dog. One of my biggest dreams my whole life. But first, you know, my parents didn't want to take on that responsibility. And then now, obviously, with all this travel, it's impossible. So one day.
We had a Doberman from when I was age 10. And we had him for 12 years. And boy, did he change our lives. I mean, in an unimaginable, previously unthinkable way. We were not dog people. We were the type of people that thought, oh, people that have got dogs in the house, that's dirty. We just thought like...
You're like, can you Clorox the dog?
Yeah, we're just all like, oh, don't put your hand there. You just touched the dog. You know, it was a bit like that. But, I mean, that we kept up. I mean, that doesn't mean... There is a way to have a dog and also be OCD, so there is a way to keep up the highest hygiene. But boy, did our dog Senna, our Doberman Senna, named after the very famous legend racing Formula One racing driver Ayrton Senna, because we are all a bit motorsporty in the family. That stems from my dad, and my God, it's just life changing. Like I miss that dog every single day. There's not a day that I do not think about him. It's amazing how they change your lives.
Yeah, I saw, even though I don't have a dog, like my feed is often very filled with dogs, and I saw this quote that I was like, oh God, I'm never gonna forget this. It yeah. said, when you adopt a dog, you adopt future heartbreak. And I was like, oof.
If I tell you what, even so, you shouldn't let that put you off going through the magical, amazing, joyful years that a dog brings you. Because although they don't live long enough at all, I mean, the fact that we got Senna to 12 is perceived to be quite remarkable because, for example, his brothers and sisters from the same litter were passing away at 6 years old, 7 years old. I think by 8 years old, most of them had passed. So because that's kind of typical and in line with a big breed like a Doberman. But it's still, even though you go through tremendous, horrible heartbreak when that day then comes, it's that shouldn't put you off the joy that you can experience. So I would still encourage you when you're in a position to rescue and give an amazing yeah. life to a dog.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Or any other animal.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I hope to have very many animals and show people that, you know, cows and chickens and pigs also have personalities. They're just like dogs. Some are very playful, some are very loving and cuddly, some are, you know. So I think that's my calling.
That's cute. So before the podcast becomes an animal rescue podcast, let's make our way back to aviation. Raul says, hey guys, what do you read? He's put in capital letters. I make a point of reading on every flight. I travel for work most weeks and will be interested to know what's on your list, or at least genre category. What about you?
So I try
and
not...
That reminds me, I've left my Kindle. I just got a message from... sorry, I just got a message saying I've left my Kindle at the gym in the bag.
What?
Oh, yeah, it was okay. In my bag. It shouldn't have been there, but yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I used to be like very into self-help books, like, you know, reading about business and reading about all this stuff. But I feel like at some point your life becomes so like it's just a race for productivity. And like I need to make every second count that I've sort of tried to intentionally go against that. So now I pretty much only read fiction. I just last year, Oscar and I reread The Hunger Games, which I know it's like teen books, but they are... incredible. They are so good. I mean, I read them as a teenager, but this time really enjoyed it. And now I'm reading this book I picked up at Heathrow completely randomly a couple weeks ago. They had like buy one, get one book half price. It's called The Satsuma Complex. It's written by some British comedian. And it's...
I've seen it.
Yeah. The cover was like, ooh, I was like, this is colorful and interesting.
Yes. Book, I've seen it. Yeah, I saw it the other day.
The book is quite a trip in some ways, so I'm enjoying it. And it's fiction to the... I feel like I'm leaving this world and entering some random life of this British guy who has weird things coming at him from all directions.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah.
I mostly am reading politics and geopolitics and stuff like that, but then sometimes I do recognize that I need to be able to switch off from... that world, otherwise there's no switch off from it, you know. So sometimes I try and find a decent fiction to read, but at the moment I will admit at the moment I am reading books written mostly by US journalists or by those that were in politics or previously part of his administration. By his, I mean Donald Trump's. And most of these books are about the Trump administration and the impact on global policy and politics and geopolitics and things like that, or the insiders and whatever. There's so many of these books that people have written about Trump's time in the White House. The reason I'm doing that, well, I'm anticipating his return in November. So I'm thinking, okay, let's try and understand the workings of this guy, because it's probably all going to become relevant again in just a matter of months.
Let's see. I think it is important to remind yourself that everything you do can't be something that's like, look at me, I'm saying I check seat maps for research and they're like, what's wrong with you? And then you only read educational things. So.
Which I agree is like that's not necessarily a good thing. So there's many, many times if I have not fallen asleep as peacefully, you know, when your mind is still active and you jump as you're falling asleep.
Yeah.
I that's because, for example, I'm an idiot. I'm in bed reading, you know, this like deep dive in the Sunday Times. I'm like, what are you doing? You should be watching Modern Family and thinking of nothing. Not thinking, ah, this is the time to catch up on, because especially in media and in the news cycle and in everything, I mean, it's just, we know and we receive and we're exposed to everything. But anyway, yeah, so that's why it's good to take time out and watch something a bit White Lotus-y.
Yeah, and that's why I love...
Can't wait for that to come back.
Yeah, as much as I love in-flight Wi-Fi, I think there's something so special and, you know...
It's freeing. Healing.
Yeah, just not being connected. Having an 18-hour flight with no Wi-Fi and you just get to leave the world for a minute. Like when I was in Peru hiking in 2016, during the 2016 election, we were... Actually, I think it was the evening of our second day of five. We had no cell phone service, no Wi-Fi for 5 days. So it was the most amazing feeling. And on the second day, which was the night of the election, we all squeezed into this woman's sort of store in the middle of the rainforest. It was just like this one building there. We were hiking through, going to sleep in tents. And she had a tiny little satellite TV the size of like an iPhone. And she was streaming, there was CNN in Spanish trying to see the election. We were
fake
going
news.
To.
Sorry, nothing. kidding.
We were going to bed at like, I don't know, 8 p.m. because we got up at 4 every day to start hiking. So at 4 the next morning, we all woke up like, oh my God, what happened yesterday? There were so many Americans in our group. So. The rumor was just spreading. People were talking like, what happened? Trump won. What happens now? So for the remaining 3 days, we were hiking without any contact to the outside world. We were just like going over these crazy scenarios in our head of what's going to happen. And we had no contact with families or no social media. It was amazing. 10 out of 10. It was kind of scary, but the fact that we couldn't
like,
be on social...
10 out of 10 recommend being in a jungle of a rainforest when Trump gets elected.
Yeah, I might repeat that in November. As long as you vote, remember to register to vote. But
you need to go to iwillvote.com, right?
Exactly. Yes, thank you. Yeah. So that's... it's just disconnecting like that is such a luxury these days.
Definitely. I have a quick question here from Chris. He says, what La Durac chocolate do you buy? I'm a huge fan of On Air, by the way. I don't think I ever spoke about that chocolate brand before, so I'm wondering how he knows. No.
I know Brussels Airlines used to give it out on flights.
Yes, I had that from Brussels. They used to give a proper, like, a decent-sized box to each
full
business class passenger.
Full-on box, yeah.
Yeah, amazing. Love that for Brussels Airlines. I don't know how you know this, Chris, but I buy the cranberry flavored one, but it's expensive. It's very expensive. I prefer Lindor. I think that's little round chocolate balls of heaven. They're amazing.
Lucky I brought you some last time I saw you.
You did. That was so nice of you. You brought amazing chocolate. The strawberry chocolate, the vegan strawberry chocolate. That was
a bit. No, too sweet.
A bit sickly, yeah. Mm.
What about the hazelnut one? Did you try that one?
I don't really like hazelnut, so my mum had that one, I think. I can't remember.
But you liked the Lindor.
But the other chocolates that you brought, 10 out of 10, you did very well. So don't show up without them again, okay?
Okay, we'll see about that.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Just threatening not to get me. So you want to come, but you don't want to bring chocolate. That's a house guest, ladies and gentlemen. A guy that just was preaching about where is class and manners. Unbelievable.
So maybe I'll bring you the chocolate you didn't like. You know.
No, maybe I won't answer the front door. How about that? We can play this game. Adam asks, regularly listen to your podcast. For the Q&A, what cards do you keep in your wallet to avoid transaction fees, earn miles, etc?
Okay, well, this answer will vary based on where you're from, obviously. I can go through what's always in my wallet. I have the Citi Prestige, which is not available in the US since many years back, but I kept it. I applied in 2019, still a card I use every day because I get 5x point at restaurants. I also carry a Betterment debit card, which has no it reimburses ATM fees. So anywhere in the world, there's no foreign transaction fees, and it pays me back if there's any fees at the ATMs. I also carry, of course, ID, driver's license, my Marriott Bonvoy Brilliant credit card, which I keep for Marriott Platinum status, even though I'm titanium. And that also has a $25 a month credit at restaurants. So I have to bring that with me to use it at restaurants. That's pretty much what's always in my wallet.
Very nice. Mine's much more simple. I have the BA Amex. And in addition to that, I have a Qatar Airways co-branded MasterCard World Card. And both of those I'm using to pool the same Avios into the same account. So it's a little more simple than that. Try not to use debit card because obviously it's not as competitive. And obviously, as Dan would always recommend, if you are entering the miles and points game by spending or making those average spends for daily life on credit card, it's being sure that you can pay it off immediately, not ending up in any situations. That's always the overarching message when it comes to that. But of course, if you've got a big payment ahead and you are thinking of, let's say you were about to spend $7,000 on something, maybe it's a down payment for a car, maybe it's whatever, and you have an option to have that $7,000 come out of a debit account, come out of your bank account via the debit card or a credit card, and then immediately pay the credit card off, do that. You'll get points. Search a card that is competitive depending on where you live and your market. And obviously, these deals tend to be better in the US, but they are now very solid across Europe, Asia. I think obviously it's a bit weaker across the continent of Africa, but many of those markets are using US banks anyway. So yeah, have a look. And Dan's the expert with that. You can DM him about it.
Yeah, well, I don't obviously know most countries, but I do know a few. And we should mention something that I don't know the number of times I see people complaining about. This airline hasn't refunded me in, you know, 12 months since my flight.
Yeah.
And I'm like, if you had paid with a credit card, you could dispute that charge with your bank and get the money back as soon as the supposed refund period is up. So let's say they say your money will be back in your account in 21 days. If it's not, boom, dispute the charge. You have your money immediately. So
yeah,
always pay for flights with credit cards because it gives you an added layer of protection in case, you know, you need a refund or there's something wrong and the airline doesn't want to. Yeah,
pay you way back. More willing to go chasing after their money than yours. You know, it's the easy thought out of it. Jay says, which app or website do you use to log your flights? I think we've both got the same answer. Go on.
My Flight Radar 24.
That is the same as me. And final question is, hi, Alex. Love the podcast. Do you or Dan ever, basically, do we ever get scared? Or rather, has anything ever happened during a flight that has made you afraid? Thanks very much. That's from Isabel via Instagram.
Did you ever talk about this on your return from LA, what you were telling me privately? I don't think, did you ever talk about this on the podcast?
Return from LA?
To or from LA, you were saying, because we were talking about turbulence and basically how sometimes, like, if you're just sitting down, you know turbulence isn't dangerous, but suddenly, like, out of nowhere, there's just a violent, like, shake or you descend or something. And you're like, whoa.
Catches
and
you off guard.
Yeah, and you lose your breath. Your heart is like, your heart jumps. And then you have to take a second to be like,
I jump when someone, like, I don't know, creeps up behind me in a restaurant.
Yeah, exactly. And yes,
taps my shoulder. It's like that kind of level. I'd say I was really nervous one time on an emergency landing with Vueling, flying from Zurich to Malaga. Yeah, the quick version, flying from Zurich to Malaga. We circled three or four times. We attempted a descent three times. And then the pilot came on and said that we couldn't land. The weather was too bad. The hail was hitting the wing. I couldn't even hear the passengers next to me because of how loud it was. It was scary. It was unpleasant. Everybody, I think, was concerned, not least until the captain decided to mention in his PA, of course, he this long drawn out PA where he was building up to saying, we need to make a decision quickly because we're now receiving our first fuel alert. in terms of having low fuel, which I don't know. I don't know why he would announce that to 189 passengers, but he did. And of course, that didn't go down very well. And anyway, in the end, we Seville Airport had basically said, no, you can't. And then, okay, we'll make an exception. But it wasn't operational that night. It was chaos. We ended up making an emergency landing at Seville after attempting Granada, and we did an aborted landing there. We did a missed approach on the second attempt. We went back to Malaga and did another missed approach. It was absolutely horrible. When we did the emergency landing in Seville, we landed. We could not go to the gate because there was nobody at the terminal, and Vueling, people were calling the police when we landed. And wow. It was mad. And we all got off the aircraft, and the pilots and the crew were literally like, don't approach us, don't approach us. And they stayed in the aircraft and made everyone get off. And we just stood there in the pitch black, on the tarmac, on a taxiway, not even on a stand, exiting via one stairs that a fireman had connected to get us off. It was insane. It was something out of a movie. And in all of that, I told you, the crew and pilots they closed the aircraft door and were in the aircraft on the taxiway while we just huddled together. And I was next to a couple who were from Luxembourg. He was a consultant and she was a sexologist. And she was so nervous during, and she was sat next to me in the middle seat and I was at the window. She was so nervous during that whole experience, which I don't blame her. People were crying. Like, it was awful. It was horrible. I, for 3 days, had her nail marks in my palm from where she had dug her nails in. It was not pleasant. So, yeah, there are times when, of course, you know, like every other human being, I have felt nervous in that way, scared in that way.
Yeah, but that's a very unusual experience. I thankfully haven't had anything like that. The most scared I've been is when I had been in Haiti on the worst and most terrifying trip of mine and Oscar's lives. We talk about it in one of our first YouTube videos on our channel, Oscar and Dan, but it's...
I'll have to go back to that.
Yeah, it was absolutely horrendous. Those videos are very bad, but it was so, so scary. So we were going to leave and fly to the Dominican Republic, and we wanted to go direct because the only option otherwise was to go through the U.S. So I had booked an airline called Air Century, which is a Dominican airline, basically only flies tiny flights within the Caribbean.
Yeah.
So first of all, the entire time we were in Haiti, we were so scared we were going to get kidnapped. And our guide was so scared
the guide was scared he was going to be kidnapped, or the guide was scared you were going to be kidnapped.
No, they were scared we were all going to get, a terrible time, but I just feel so, so bad for the people of Haiti because of what has happened now. But we get through security, and the sigh of relief we breathe after being like, okay, we're safe back here. Then we see our plane, which is like a 35-year-old BAE Jetstream 32 with like six...
I'm out. I'm on the phone to VistaJet saying, get me out of here.
Yeah, it had like six or seven windows on each side. Such bad shape. And keep in mind, we're still in Haiti. Like, the gangs are shooting left and right. They could easily shoot this plane down if we took off. And you literally take off and fly over the city. So I was like, oh God. We get on board, and the windows, I don't know how they were making windows back then at BAE, but the windows were blue and like distorted like a fisheye. So the entire outside was completely distorted and blue. And we were like, okay, so we were relieved to get through security. Now there needs to be another 30 minutes of us thinking this plane is going to, just crash. It was so genuinely scary because of the state of the plane.
Yeah.
So when we finally landed in Santo Domingo, it's the only time in my life I have literally kissed the ground. Both Oscar and I got out of the plane. Wow. We are safe. We made it. And then we went to a grocery store and cried out of relief. It was a crazy, crazy experience.
That sounds crazy. I'm going to have to go back and find that video.
Yeah. We couldn't vlog most of it because we were just too terrified the whole time. So we got a little bit of footage, but it was, whew, Yeah.
Cool. So watched your video yesterday, your Etihad video, which was good.
Gracias. Shukran.
Yeah. Yes. Very nice. Very nice. Well, look, I'm glad that we had the opportunity to have this wide-ranging Q&A roundup. And we're going to get together same time next week and do it all over again. We can have a look at what's going on in the headlines, take more of your questions, and have a good catch-up. I mean, who knows? You might even be dropping in, I hear.
Yes, perhaps. We'll see. We'll see.
Remember to let me know. I swear to God, no phone calls before 8:30 in the morning, and don't you dare think about showing up without Lindt or Lindt chocolate. Okay, those are my two requirements.
Okay, let me take a note. Do not bring Lindt or Lindt chocolate. We will see you next week on air. Bye bye.
See you later.
At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.